Welcome to Twins Coast to Coast Mirror Image MS Madness Podcast. We are identical twins, Tamara and Terry, living with multiple sclerosis. We are MS advocates who hope to shine a light on our experience to enhance others' understanding of living with a chronic illness. Our podcast is unique, informative, and we hope inspirational. Welcome to Twins Coast to Coast Mirror Image MS Madness. We are delighted today to welcome Brett Drummond from Melbourne, Australia, to join us today to talk about multiple sclerosis and research on our show. Welcome, Brett.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yes. Well, tell us all about MS Translate. There's so much to know about you.
Yeah, so it's quite a long story, but I'll try and keep it somewhat brief. So, as you've already said, and the accent will probably give away, I'm based down in Melbourne, Australia. So my background is in multiple sclerosis research. So I did multiple sclerosis research for many years, back when I was a much younger man than I am now, looking mostly into what causes the breakdown in immune tolerance. So basically what happens in the body so that the immune system starts attacking self, considering we have so many things that are meant to stop that from happening. I got to a point doing research where I needed a bit of a change. The stresses of research became something I wanted to shift away from. But having been involved in multiple sclerosis for a number of years by that point, I was really passionate about continuing to give in that space. And I'd had some background during my research time also doing science communication. And I think one of the biggest things that struck me while I was doing my research was how big a gap existed between people doing the research and the people who were actually impacted by the research. And so I started having some conversations with my brother Eric, who is the other half of MS Translate, and he comes from a web and social media background. And over many late night conversations, he was actually living in the UK at the time, and I was in the lab at 3 a.m. doing experiments. Essentially, the idea of MS Translate came up, and that was to use these platforms to talk to people living with multiple sclerosis and the MS community in general about research, but in a way that's accurate, which is really important. One of the things that we don't see a lot in terms of how research is covered in mainstream media, but also easy to understand. So that's probably a bit of a background to MS Translate, but as you say, there's lots we can talk about.
There is so much. I just love the way how it is organized, because you can go from A to Z and all kinds of topics and videos for people like Tamara and myself to be able to find, because again, there's so much out there, but we want to find, like you said, something that is accurate. And I was on the Tysabri research way back in the early 2000s. So I know how important it is to find research, to get it out there and let people know how to find it. So tell us the exciting new things that you're researching now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a really good point there. And I think one of the things around research and talking about research, especially when we're talking about MS, and, you know, it goes beyond that, but there is so much that is out there. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned over the just over 10 years now that we've been doing MS Translate, it was our 10th birthday in October last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Is that it's finding the research that people are interested in, but in terms of the way you talk about how it's organized, a lot of credit for that goes to the MS community, because, you know, it's been feedback that we've received over that time to help us continue to develop the style that we do it and the formats that we do it to make sure it's what people are interested in and the ways that are going to best help them and understand what's going on. But as you say, there is a lot of exciting things happening at the moment in terms of multiple sclerosis research. I think last year the biggest one was probably the new research regarding the role of Epstein-Barr virus in multiple sclerosis.
So, very fascinating.
Yeah. And I mean, this has been something, showing my age a little bit here, but this has been something that we were talking about when I was starting doing MS research in 2005. So, and you know, it wasn't new then. So it's certainly been something that we've thought about a lot in terms of MS research for a really long time. It's just that we didn't quite have all of the pieces of the puzzle. And so to step through that just a little bit, if you and your interesters and yes. your listeners are interested, back when I was starting to do research, while we talked about EBV, the thought was that, you know, it looked like about 95% of people living with multiple sclerosis had been exposed to the virus, mm-hmm. but about 90% of people in the general population had also been exposed. So it just seemed like it was a really common virus. It's the virus that causes glandular fever or mono, infectious mononucleosis, mm-hmm. as it's called in the US. But importantly, most people who are exposed to the virus never have any symptoms. Most of us get exposed to the virus, but never end up getting mono. But so at the time back then, it just seemed, you know, yes, it's slightly more common in people living with MS, but, you know, it just seems like it's really common. And then a couple of years ago, there was a really big German study with about 1,000 people living with MS. And they found in that study that using some newer techniques that were more sensitive, they could see that actually every single person living with MS had been exposed to the virus.
Wow.
And then that took another step forward early in 2022 with a study coming out of the US, coming out of Harvard, using US military veterans, again, around about 1,000 people. And again, they saw that there was basically 100% of people living with MS had been exposed to the virus. And what they were able to do in that study that took it a step further is that because they were in the military, they had blood samples throughout their lives, mm-hmm. and they could see that it was only after they'd been exposed to the virus that they started to be able to see damage to the nerves. So there was this new step forward, new piece to the puzzle that makes us now think that it's sort of impossible to get MS without being exposed to the virus. But the virus itself isn't necessarily the cause. There must be other things going on there as well. But that's really exciting for what it might mean for the future.
Absolutely. If we could find a way, a vaccine to prevent mono in people, wouldn't that be wonderful? You know, it's one less trigger that could trigger your immune system to turn on you. And have you found in your research anybody coming up with medications to prevent the exposure or for people coming down with the Epstein-Barr virus?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so there is an EBV virus that's currently being, an EBV vaccine that's currently being trialed. So Moderna, who made one of the COVID vaccines that we're all aware of, they've created an mRNA-based mm-hmm. vaccine for EBV that's only just, it's in very early stages, but started to be trialed last year. And that's exciting because theoretically, and we have to say theoretically at the moment because we don't know, but you know, if we had a really effective vaccine, potentially with how we're thinking about this virus at the moment, if we could stop people being exposed, we may have a future where we can stop people from developing MS.
That would be so exciting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the first time really I think I've ever been able to say that in the past since I've started being involved in MS. So, you know, there is, being a scientist, you know, I'm naturally guarded about all of these things, but then there's a lot of things that need to go right for that to be true. But there's a possibility, and I think that's exciting. But also for people who are currently living with MS, obviously that's not necessarily going to be helpful in their lives. But there are trials going on at the moment that are looking at targeting EBV. So this virus stays after you get exposed to it. It stays around in your body. We never completely clear it. It sort of goes into hibernation. And some research has shown that actually that may be contributing to progression as well in people living with MS. So there's a trial actually going on here in Australia and another trial in the US by a company called Atara Biotherapeutics that are looking at what happens if we can completely clear that virus from the body of people living with MS. And they've got some cool ways of doing that. And some of the really early stage trials preliminary trials have shown certainly some benefits from that. So I think we should see some trial data coming out of that this year. I'm expecting later in the year we have the big ECTRIMS conference in Europe, and I'm expecting we will see some data on that this year.
Brett, that is so exciting and wonderful news, especially for those newly diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. 20, 30 years won't look like. Terry and I have both had multiple sclerosis for 25 years. Our multiple sclerosis has progressed to where we're now in wheelchairs. I truly believe for those just diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, 20 years will not look the same for them. With all of the wonderful research, all of the scientists such as you are doing and sharing the information.
Yeah, I definitely think the landscape now has changed a lot over the past 10 to even 10 years with a lot of the new therapies that have come in and more around how we should use those therapies as well. I think there's a growing understanding and certainly something that's discussed at these conferences a lot around should we be starting people who are newly diagnosed on these more powerful therapies from the beginning. And there is a lot of data now to suggest that that is actually the better approach in terms of long-term outcomes. And there's a lot of data now suggesting that, you know, using that approach, a lot of people won't progress out of the relapsing remitting phase, that we can keep them there because of the way that we can slow down the disease. One of the, I think the flip side of that, and not to be negative about it at all, because it's not a negative, but I think certainly from talking to some people outside of the MS community who, you know, may have heard of a friend or a distant family member who's just been diagnosed, and they will, you know, talk to me and say, oh, I know someone that's just been diagnosed with MS, but that's not that bad anymore, is it? And I don't think that's the mindset that we want to get into. While things are much better than it is, I think we still need to, there's still a long way to go. It's still a, you know, a very devastating disease that hits people in the prime of their lives. So, you know, while it is great that we have a lot of these new treatments, we're still continuing to try and get better and better treatments and to make more advancements to improve the quality of lives as well, because that's certainly something that I hear a lot from the MS community. It's while the treatments are fantastic, there's still a lot that we want to help our day-to-day lives. What are the role of diet, of exercise? How can we improve fatigue? All of these things are really important, and so there's still a lot to be done. But yeah, I completely agree that it's a much better time now than 20 or 30 years ago, but still a long way to go.
Absolutely. So listeners, hear Brett now, that even if you're diagnosed at now, and even if you've been diagnosed through the last 20 years, you do have to take care of yourself. You have to be aware of your mind, your body, and your health as a whole. And it doesn't matter if you have MS or not, that is so important. But I agree with you, Brett. We really need to make sure we take care of our bodies and our health to move forward in life. And just because you're diagnosed now, or like Tamara and myself in wheelchairs, we are big believers that life keeps moving forward and in hopes to one day remyelinate the myelin. So going forward on that, tell us a little bit. I know you're doing research on remyelination. Will you let our listeners know a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that remyelination is the next big thing. It's the holy grail in terms of what we're talking about at the moment in MS research. As things stand, as we were just talking about, we have a lot of really effective therapies, but all of those therapies work to sort of slow new damage from occurring. None of them do anything to repair the damage that's already there. And so that's where a lot of research is aimed at the moment, is trying to find a way that we can repair the damage to the myelin sheath, that insulation that surrounds the nerves. Because if we can find that, I never like using the word cure, because I see it used far too often when we talk about MS research for things that definitely aren't a cure. And this won't be a cure in the traditional sense of a word, but if we can have really effective therapies to stop new damage and really effective therapies to repair old damage, and then combine those with the other things that you were just talking about in terms of, you know, keeping the mind and body healthy, I think we're then at a stage where we have very complete management of the disease. So it's not a cure, but we're getting a lot closer to being able to get on top of things. And so what we know is that...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So what we know is that myelin repair is definitely possible. I mean, it happens. So damage to the myelin happens in lots of different things. If you get a concussion, if you get an infection, myelin can get damaged. But in most people, that myelin just gets repaired. And even in people living with multiple sclerosis, we know in the early stages that there is repair that happens after the damage. But what seems to happen over time is that repair process stops working as effectively. There's a block that stops it from being able to happen. And so groups around the world are looking at different ways that they can do this. So there's a trial ongoing at the University of Cambridge at the moment where they're looking at a compound called metformin.
Yes.
In combination with another compound called clemastine. So metformin came out of some work that they'd done at the University of Cambridge in some animal studies where they'd noticed that the aging process seems to be what's causing the block in myelin repair. And so they did a study in these mice where they looked at two things. They knew that one of the best ways to sort of reverse that aging process is fasting. And so they looked in mice, they did an intermittent fasting protocol where they had some mice that only ate every second day and compared those to mice that were eating normally. They had the animal version of multiple sclerosis called EAE. And what they saw in the mice that were fasting is that they were able to repair their myelin better.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, really interesting mm-hmm. work. And they knew that metformin, this compound that's a commonly used diabetes drug, sort of yes. mimics the process of fasting. So they repeated those experiments using metformin as well and saw the same results. So they wow. are now progressing to look at that in a small cohort of people living with MS. I think it's going to be roughly around 25 to 50 people in this initial trial. But they're using it in combination with another compound that came out of some work from the University of California, San Francisco, where, you know, they were doing a screen of just a number of potential compounds, and they found that this compound clemastine, which is a component of a lot of over-the-counter antihistamines, actually shows some potential to remyelinate as well. So they're doing that in both of the trials.
That is so fascinating. So are they using low dose of metformin?
They're using high dose of clemastine, I think. And no?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know the exact dosing protocol. I think they're using a few different doses across the trial, but I haven't actually seen the experimental process yet. Well, once they present some of that data, which I think is probably not going to be 2023, I think we're thinking 2024, we might see some of the data coming out of that. We'll get a better idea of the doses that they're using from that.
Do you know if they're selecting patients that are secondary progressive? Or are they trying to use people that are more progressive, like Tamara and I?
Good question. Again, I think it's mostly going to be people with relapsing remitting MS in this initial trial, is my understanding. But I think they do want to go on and do further trials with people with progressive MS as well. And they're also interested in doing a trial where they look at fasting. So in the initial trial, having talked to people living with MS in the area around the university, they found that the feedback they got was people were more likely to be able to take a tablet than to do the fasting. But they're interested to get a group of people who want to do the fasting as well to see what results they get from that, so that they can get some evidence about both.
Wonderful.
Terrific. So Tamara, any questions?
I just thank you so much, Brett, for the research and the dedication that you have put forth to multiple sclerosis in the many years of being a scientist. And we're so thankful for the work that you do.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for the work that you do. I mean, these types of activities are so important. And I think we've got a very shared mission here of making sure that the right information is getting out to people and through your podcast. I think you're doing a fantastic job. So it's a pleasure for me to be involved, and certainly anytime if we can help at MS Translate, don't hesitate to ask, because it's fantastic.
And we really would like to have you on a maybe even a quarterly basis, so we can just touch base on research and exciting things that are happening, or just a conversation that you may have had with somebody that our listeners need to know about. So
how can our listeners get in contact with you and find MS Translate and information?
Yeah, so MS Translate you can find on all of your major social media channels. We've also got our website, which is just all lowercase mstranslate.com.au. But otherwise, yeah, if you just look on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, it's all just, if you search for MS Translate, capital MS, lowercase translate, all one word, it should all come up. And you can contact us through all of those platforms. So you can send messages through there, comment under posts. We do our best to respond to every comment that comes through. So certainly that's the best way to get in touch and ask questions. And that's what, you know, that's the part of doing this that I really enjoy, is getting to have the interaction. So I will do Facebook live videos where it's a Q&A, where I have conversations with our community and answer questions directly. So certainly through all of those, if your listeners get in touch with you, you've obviously also got my email and details. Feel free to pass them on through there as well. But I'd love to be involved whenever you want to have me back. And I've already been talking to some of the other people that I work with in the research field and telling them that I was doing this. And I've got a number of people who would be interested in joining you for a chat as well.
That would be wonderful, Brett. Thank you.
Dr. Travis Stiles, who I work with, who's based in San Diego, and his company is currently working on a remyelination therapy. I know he is definitely keen to be involved, so he may be able to be on for a future episode.
Our purpose is to just let our listeners, you know, have the real information, good information, and the tools like you offer, and that's why we do what we do.
Well, and I think you have I say this a lot. I obviously have insight from a research perspective. I've been interested in MS for a number of years, so I can tell you a lot about MS in a lot of different ways. But what I don't have is the lived experience of having multiple sclerosis. And I think it's really important that we combine those two. I think it's really important to make sure that research progresses by that we listen to people living with MS about what they understand about the disease, because you understand much more than us researchers ever will. But it's you bring a really unique insight into this as well. And by having this podcast, you're asking questions and having things that the MS community are going to be interested in, because they're sharing those experiences with you. So I think it's really valuable.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you. And Brett, thank you again. And we look forward to many more conversations and with your team all around the world. So again, from Tamara and I, we really, really appreciate your time today.
Thanks for listening to Mirror Image MS Madness, where we share the good, the bad, and the funny. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Twins Coast to Coast. That's Twins Coast, the number 2 Coast. You can also email us at twinscoasttocoast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Stay tuned to our next episode. We release our dates on Instagram, so follow us there for updates. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to find your happy place, and we will see you in the next one. Mwah.